here with, I'm talking on the phone with Luke Meckin, and today's date is May 3rd, 2005, and it's about 1 o'clock, and I'm interviewing Luke Meckin in my next podcast.
Luke McChewan.
McChewan?
Yeah.
Sorry. Do you acknowledge that this recording will be taped over the phone?
Yes.
All right. Perfect. All right. Let's get started here with the first of our oral history interview questions, and that would be if you can recall, what was your life like before the war?
Oh, I guess I was probably a typical teenager for the time. I was in high school. I was an athlete and a good student. Very interested in the war, and knew that I would be going into the service within a short period of time.
And you had any brothers and sisters? There we go.
I have a brother, and he was a senior at Gonzaga University. He was going to be drafted, and he gave up his deferment, and he had a student deferment, and enlisted, and he went down to Alabama with some unit of the Engineer Corps, and he eventually was over in Normandy and was there all the way through to Berlin.
Okay. And you were going to school in what town?
Anaconda, 10. I was going to a Catholic school, St. Peter's High School.
Mm-hmm. What kind of political meetings did you have before the war?
Well, we used to go up to the gymnasium and with broomsticks and do close order drill in maneuvers. No shooting, nothing of that nature. We were always being talked to by recruiters, and we were, of course, deeply interested in the war and interested in what happened to us.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. What was your family's, or for your matter, your like political leanings? Like, were you supportive of the president, or were you Republican, Democrat?
My family was all Democrats. My father was a smelterman, and we were probably staunch Democrats and staunch believers in the New Deal and President Roosevelt.
Prior to the war, you're going to high school. What was your greatest daily concerns?
Yeah. What was my what?
Your greatest, everyday concerns.
Probably the concerns that all students have. How was I doing in school? How was I doing in athletics? What would I do when I graduated? And where would I go? And there was a lot of uncertainty, but there was certainty in that as soon as we hit 18, we had to register for the draft, and we were gone.
What sports did you play in high school?
I was a four-year letterman in basketball and 4 years in football and captain of the football team.
Did you have any family members, aunts, uncles, your father, anybody serve in the military before?
My father served in World War I.
Okay.
He was in the Navy. He had just immigrated from Ireland over to America, landed in Anaconda where he had an aunt, and there wasn't much going on around here in those days, I understand. So he enlisted in the Navy, and he was a veteran of the World War I and saw action overseas.
Was he supportive of the military service?
Yes, he was.
He was. And did that play an influence on you?
Yeah, it probably did. I was kind of an idealist, and, you know, it was just a reality of life that you were going to go in the service. Yeah, I didn't have any place where I'd get a deferment for anything, and I wouldn't have wanted one. Okay. I enlisted at age 17.
Okay. So you're in Anaconda, Montana. You're just going to high school. You know, you have your daily concerns. But as the war was beginning in Germany and in Japan, what were your opinions regarding it?
Well, I was, you know, highly incensed and deeply motivated by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was a sneak attack. I was all in favor of going to war with Japan. And as far as Germany went, we used to be able to turn on the radio, and every now and then we'd get Hitler ranting and raving on the channel, whatever it was. And I can remember as young guys, we'd sit around and listen to him rant and rave and probably yell back at the radio.
Like, before Pearl Harbor, though, I mean, how much aware of Japan's actions in China and Germany's actions in Poland, how much of that were you aware of?
I was aware mostly of Germany's actions in Poland and Hitler's aggression. I don't really recall an awful lot of interest in Japan until Pearl Harbor.
So at that time, what was your opinion then on Americans staying out of the war and staying relatively isolated?
I wasn't an isolationist. I was for getting involved.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Okay. Did any, you know, you said your family's from Ireland, right?
Yes.
Did your heritage or ethnic, background have any, you know, precautions to the war or any sway? I mean, being England was fighting in the war, I mean, did that have an effect on your family?
Well, it didn't have any effect because, and the part of Ireland that my father and my grandfather came from, they were very anti-English. We were a Catholic family, and we felt the English was trying to destroy our religion, and we were not very pro-England.
Okay.
But when the war came, we went along with England.
Okay. So, that leads up to America's involvement. What were you doing when you found out that Pearl Harbor was attacked?
You know, I was at my uncle's house, uncle and aunt's house, babysitting their two, at that time, two children, and they were just young, 6, 7 years or so. I had the radio on, and everything was interrupted with the announcement of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and I called my uncle, and he came roaring home, and we listened to the news on the radio. Our reaction was one of a shock, dismay, and I guess to put it bluntly, we'll get the bastards.
Yeah. So that pretty much, was that pretty much the feeling throughout town, you know, and your family? I mean, your community and your family all pretty much had the same.
I think so. You know, there was a few that lived in the community that were old Germans. And I remember I was waiting to go in the service after, well, it was summer in high school. Yeah, 41, yeah, summer in high school. I was working at the brewery, local Anaconda Brewery, Rocky Mountain Beer. And we had an old brewmaster that refused to contribute to us getting some medal for 100% contribution for defense. We all hated that old German brewmaster. ironically, years later, when I came back to Anaconda as a lawyer, he'd passed away, and he'd made a hell of a lot of money. I was probating his estate. He made a hell of a lot of money investing in sugar, which was a very racist commodity. Mm. Wow. He was pretty wealthy, huh. Whereas the rest of us just had a gold star, I guess.
Yeah. So the United States, we're going to enter war, and lo and behold, Jeanette Rankin did not vote for the war. What was your feelings on that?
Oh, I was opposed to Jeanette Rankin's position on the war, and I don't have too vivid of a recollection of that. Later on in life, I was to know Jeanette Rankin and her brother Wellington Rankin, who ran for the United States Senate and ran as a socialist for governor, I believe. I was, you know, shocked that Jeanette would vote against going to war.
Yeah. Is that pretty much your whole family's feeling?
I believe so, yes.
So, America's at war, and you enlisted. How did that come about?
Well, my brother, who was in the Army, was always telling me to enlist in the Navy. His big objection to the Army, as I remember, was that he had to sleep in mud all the time. He went through basic training in Alabama, and the bugs down there and all that got him, and so he was telling me to go to the Navy, and of course my father, having been a veteran of World War I in the Navy, so I went over and went to enlist in the Navy, and got into a little argument with the recruiter, who happened to referee a basketball game that we felt he screwed us in, and so I walked out, and there was a guy standing next door, and he was a recruiter for the Coast Guard. And so he grabbed me and he had me signed up, and next day I was on my way to Seattle.
Yeah. That's a good story. What was your family and friends' reaction to you just jumping into the Coast Guard?
Well, I don't really think they had any big reaction. They knew I was going to go into the Navy or the Coast Guard. I guess they didn't know about the Navy, Coast Guard. And I came home and told them I was in the Coast Guard, and a couple of days later, I was gone.
So
if they had a reaction, I wasn't there to hear it.
So you left for basic, like, right away?
Yeah.
Pretty much? I mean, did you get put on a train and were just sent up?
I got put on a train in Butte and went out to Seattle, and I was sworn in Seattle.
Okay.
And that night I was on a train going down to Oakland, California, where I did my boot camp at Alameda, California.
At Alameda, California? How was boot camp for you?
Well, I was a young kid, you know, and it was great. You know, I liked the regimentation, I guess, and I liked the drills, and I was impressed by the authority, and I was pretty much of a gung-ho young recruit, I guess.
So, was military life, was it a good, positive was military life a positive influence on you, or,
Yeah, I think it was a positive influence. Mm-hmm. I think I learned to take care of myself, and I learned what the world was all about. I thought boot camp was a good training. We had those crusty old bosun mates that put us through a hell of a pace, and I liked the physical activities and so forth. I remember one thing, they had us standing on a bridge, like over a swimming pool, and they lit the swimming pool, we had to jump into it and swim to the side, to the wall, and I was a pretty good swimmer, and I went in and I was able to tread water and everything and get out. And, there was others who were unable to tread water, and there were some that just refused to jump in, and it was quite a, like a Chinese fire drill. But I was young and eager, and so I was jumping into that damn swimming pool for several days, teaching others how to jump in and tread water. I remember that.
Oh, okay. Was it hard being away from home?
You know, it was so all-absorbing, so fast. I really can't, I don't think I was ever homesick. I really don't.
Okay.
You know, for the first so many days or weeks or whatever the period was, they wouldn't let us telephone or write letters or anything.
Oh, wow.
Then after a period, we got to use the telephone for 3 minutes, and that was it.
Hmm.
I think it was tougher on my mother than it was on me.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, how did, like, family members not keeping in contact with you, how was that?
Well, they could write to me.
Oh, they could write to you.
Yeah, yeah, the letters just kind of stacked up. But if there was any, they were all censored, and if there was anything in there that they felt somebody should know, they immediately get word to them. And there were some guys that were a little older and some that had families, and they had the worries about their children.
Sure.
And their wife, and I think they were granted more privilege than I was granted, or those my age were granted.
How old were you when you...
I was 17 when I enlisted.
17. So, well, fairly young, huh?
Fairly young. I'm 80 now.
During basic, were you in kept form of world affairs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a little a scuttlebutt sheet that they used to put out saying what was going on. And, of course, we had radio contact with the outside world. But we were so busy, we didn't really get a chance to do much with that. We knew of the bigger, you know, we knew of the well, mainly we knew more about the affairs over in Europe than we did in the Pacific.
What was it like to meet new people from around the country at basic training?
Well, you know, they would tease me coming from Montana. They'd always go, and call you a sheep herder, and make suggestions about lewd and lascivious acts with sheep for Montanans.
Yeah.
They would rouse me. I being probably the youngest one in the group, probably caught more arousing than anybody else.
So the rousing was pretty...
It was good-natured.
It's good-natured, though?
Yeah.
That's good. But there was some tension there, though.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
They didn't know anything about Montana.
Sure.
And a lot of these guys were from the East Coast, too, and they thought we were just a bunch of hillbillies.
So, all in all, what was your least favorite part of basic training?
When they had us do night watch, they'd take us out to an area and we had to patrol it at night. And they would, it was pretty dark and everything. And you'd be walking along the path and all of a sudden there'd be a older guy, one of the trainers jumping out with a Japanese samurai sword or whatever in the hell it was, and just scare the living hell out of you. And, you know, I guess I was pretty spooky out there anyway because I wasn't used to marching around in the dark and on night guard, night duty.
Sure.
They put us through the paces.
How well did you feel basic training prepared you for your later duties?
thought it prepared us. Prepared me well. I learned how to tie all the knots, and I learned how to operate a small boat. And I think it prepared us well. Even prepared us for KP. Everybody had to take a turn at KP, cleaning up the damn kitchen. That was tough duty.
Oh yeah. So, were you mentally and physically prepared? I mean, did you?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. I was in good physical condition. They used to throw packs on us and to make us go on marches of 3 to 5 miles. And a lot of guys dropped out, and then a lot of the older guys had a hell of a time with that.
So you're almost concluded with basic training, and you're ready to go to what were your expectations? Were you expected to go straight to a boat, or was there any more training for you after basic training?
Well, we were all given an IQ test, and I believe I scored fairly high in it, and I was selected to go to quartermaster school in New Groton, Connecticut, and through a mix-up on an eye examination, I got bumped out of that, and that really got me upset. I wanted to go to that school.
Yeah.
And I wound up as a seaman, and I was assigned to a ship called the USS Sausalito as a seaman second class. Mm-hmm. I was apprentice seaman first, and then I was seaman second class.
That was your first assignment?
Yeah.
Yep. And what were, at your new post, what were the living conditions like aboard your ship?
Very cramped. Very cramped. We were a rather small ship, patrol frigate, much like a destroyer escort. Our sleeping quarters were really cramped.
Yeah.
And it was cramped. There's no question about it. I guess that's the best word I could give you. And the dining room was pretty small. And later on, when we were in heavy seas, we used to have to balance a tray with one hand and try and eat with the other. It was kind of a good trick to be able to do it.
Yeah. What was when you're out at sea, what were the conditions like?
Well, I was up in the North Pacific, up towards the Bering Sea, from the Aleutian Islands. I was up in Attu and Kiska. We had a battle at Attu, and were successful in getting the Japs off the island. And then with the orders were to go over and take Kiska. And when we got to Kiska, the Japs had abandoned the island and all left in apparently submarines. And that was as close as I ever came to any, actual combat.
Oh, the first island you said you were in the battle of what?
Attu, A-T-T-U.
A-T-T-U. Thank you. And what were your primary, what was your ship's primary duties there?
We were shelling the island.
Oh, you guys were shelling the island?
Yeah.
What kind of guns did you have aboard your ship?
The biggest gun we had was a 3-inch gun.
3-inch?
Yeah. And, of course, we had 20s and 40s. I was the trainer on a 3-inch gun. There would have been 5 assigned to each 3-inch gun. And also we had what's called hedgehogs. They were like a depth bomb. And if we got anything on our sonar that indicated there was any hostile vessels, we would drop the sonar off the stern of the boat.
Mm. Was that pretty exciting? The shelling of Attu?
Yeah, it was. It was. We weren't in the primary field. We were kind of in the support outside. We got a few shots at a few airplanes, and the trainer sat on the right side, and the pointer sat on the left side of the gun. And then when we got our crosshairs to zero in on a target, we let her go. I don't know if we ever hit anything, no.
The shot, like, you know, firing your guns or whatever, I mean, what was your, I mean, was it, what was the actual conditions like? Was it loud? I mean, was it,
Yeah, it was a loud blast when it took off. I guess that the conditions, as far as I was concerned, was my duties as a pointer on the gun. I was seated and looking into the scope, matching up the crosshairs and that. And we were in pretty rough sea, and we were right up in the bow of the ship. So every time we'd be in a trough or come out of a trough, man, we'd take a hell of a beating from the sea. We had to be very careful if we get swept overboard. Some had to tie ropes on them to stay on board.
Wow.
We were tied into the seat.
Okay. Was it cold?
Well, it was very cold, yeah.
Very cold. I can imagine that sea being cold up there.
Oh, yeah. It was cold and very rough. Very, very rough. I mean, those waves were many times taller than the mast on the ship.
Speaking of your ship, what was your opinion about, you know, food served aboard your ship?
You know, the only thing I can remember aboard the ship was loading on supplies, and we get these huge frozen chunks of liver. And I think there wasn't a person on that ship that wasn't damn sick of liver.
Yeah.
I think, and that's the main, well, then there was shit on the shingle, you know.
Yeah.
And that was what the main meals we had. That's the main ones I remember.
Yeah. Anything else about living aboard the ship that you'd like to mention? Injuries or anything like that?
I got hung up in one of the guns one time and lost the part of my right index finger.
Oh.
And it was off. We were loading. I was a loader on that gun that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ramming the shells into the breech, and I didn't even know I'd lost a finger until one of the other guys told me that I was bleeding all over.
Jeez.
It just smashed it.
Wow.
Made me a disabled veteran of World War II.
Oh, yeah.
I still get a pension.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. What other kind of conditions were there? I mean, did you have to get... How was getting used to the sea, for example?
I did fine. You know, I was too damn dumb to be seasick. A lot of guys were much smarter, and they'd ram their finger down their throat and heave all over the place. And they'd be taken off the ship when we hit a port, and they were flown back to the States. And as I say, I was too damn dumb. I thought there was something wrong with those crazy bastards that they couldn't take that sea. And I was there from the day the ship was commissioned until we turned it over to the Russians.
That's good. What was that communication like with your family?
Well, you know, we every now and then, if we hit a port someplace, we'd get some mail that would be sent up to the ship. But when we were at sea, of course, there was no mail or no communication. You'd have a lot to do. I probably wrote a letter home about every day.
But how often did they receive your mail?
Well, it was just the same with them, you know, until we hit a port where by me, or... the postal. I forget what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I got there, they'd get all of my letters all at one time.
Oh, okay. What was contact with your brother like?
Very limited. You know, I never knew where he was at.
Yeah.
And he didn't really know where I was at. I'd have him, you know, I'd have his address for the battalion there, or whatever it was that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd have my ship. I don't think we had hardly any mail between us.
Huh.
I heard about him mainly by letters from my parents.
Oh, okay. So that's how you knew he was doing okay?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Besides being a gun loader and in that duties, what other mission or what other duties were you responsible for aboard your ship?
Well, I was kind of young and I was kind of small, and I always felt that the horseshit duties fell upon me. I was the youngest on there, and they passed the buck down to me, and I was just a seaman first class.
Yeah.
I had to go over the ship and when we were in dock and do some painting and scrubbing and go into some of the, what the hell they call them, the holes down where the bilges were. I'd have to go down and stop out the bilges and do some painting. And I got the horseshit detail, I'll tell you that. At least I felt it did. Probably everybody felt the same way.
Speaking of duties, you mentioned earlier that you didn't. You had there was a mistake with your eye exam to go to.
That's where I got screwed up. That's when I was going to go to quartermaster school in Connecticut, and it was the night that we were finally out of boot camp, and I joined a bunch of others, and we partied until early in the morning, and I got up awakened early in the morning and told to get over and get the eye exam, and I was probably so hungover I couldn't see the eye chart.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't get to go to school.
If you would have been able to go, just out of curiosity, what rank would you have held aboard a ship?
Quartermaster?
And
yeah.
What was that difference in the...
Quartermaster was a pretty good rank. You were in the cabin all the time. You pretty much had charge of the running of the ship. There'd usually be an officer of the day that would be in the cabin with you, and you would have you'd be holding the ship on its course, and it was kind of a prestigious job.
So during your service aboard the ship, being in the lower rank, how, were you kicking yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still am.
Still
a sore spot with me. That bastard, I went back over to the doctor and raised hell with him, and that's when I didn't get cross-marshaled.
Uh-huh.
And demanded another eye test and demanded a pair of glasses, and they finally just booted me out of the infirmary, and that was the end of it. It's, I unloaded on them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just, wrong time at the wrong place.
Absolutely, yeah. Because I had 20/20 vision.
Yeah. Oh. It's a heartbreaker.
Yeah, it really was. You know, I'd have probably been piloting some landing craft going into the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have had a landing craft, and they're bringing the guys into the shore, and probably got knocked off in the water. Because a lot of them did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Besides you guys' missions at Kiskis and Attu, what other missions did you guys have? Were you responsible for any search and rescue?
Yeah, we were on air sea rescue.
Okay.
And we'd lay out there in those damn waters for 3 weeks at a time and get the helby out of us and come in and get the ship repaired and clean the bilges and all that kind of stuff and go back out again for 3-4 weeks at a stretch. Probably the most interesting part that I had, though, was when Truman dropped the bomb on Japan.
Mm-hmm.
We got brought back to Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and we got outfitted with big the bow of the ship had big icebreakers, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Welded to them, and we went back up, and by then the war in Germany, in England had, in Germany had ended, and we took on a bunch of Russians, and we trained, this was before the bomb, right after, we were going, the European theater was winding down.
Yep.
We went to Seattle, and then we went back up to Cold Bay, Alaska. We got some work there, as I recall, on the ship. And then we went up farther into the Bering Straits. And anyway, we took on Russians.
Yep.
And we trained the Russians until Truman dropped the bomb. And right after Truman dropped the bomb, we gave the ship to the Russians, and we were brought back. And it was very interesting living with the Russians, because there was only about just a handful of us Americans on the ship. I'd say it was 3-1 Russians, and of course we couldn't communicate very well with them.
Sure.
The only words I remember to this day was "Podyop Pukushat," and that meant "chow down." And the Russians were very young, some of them. Yeah, and if they were underage, and I think 16 was their age, they were their heads were shaved, and that meant you couldn't let them drink, smoke, or tell a dirty story. And they had a very close relationship with the Russian officers, much more so than our American relationship with the officers. The rank didn't seem to mean that much to them.
Okay. Aboard your ship, during your time on the ship anyways, what was your, favorite, travel destination for shore leave?
Well, probably Seattle. We didn't see much of it, but I guess we were in Seattle. Well, yeah, after the war ended, we came back to Seattle, and I was at some camp outside of Seattle, a shore station.
Yep.
And then I got transferred to Washington, D.C., and I was at a radio station in Alexandria, Virginia. That's where I was. And we had a lot of liberty there, a lot of leave.
Yeah.
Washington was dry, and so we used to bum a ride up into Maryland, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know how in the hell we get home.
When you were up in the North Pacific, you mentioned something about Dutch Harbor.
Yeah.
What was that for you? Or what was Dutch Harbor for you guys?
Well, Dutch Harbor was really where the Japs were intending to go.
Uh-huh.
They were island hopping, mm-hmm. and they were very, their strategy was to get Dutch Harbor, much like they got the Pearl Harbor,
uh-huh.
and by cutting them off at Attu and Kiska, we were able to, to prevent them from getting into Dutch Harbor. harbor was under a lot of stress, and I remember going ashore in Dutch Harbor a few times, and it was kind of a mean, ugly place. I mean, everybody was pretty tense in there. I didn't particularly care for Dutch Harbor. The SPs, Shore Patrol, they were vicious. Jesus Christ, they'd go in a place and get their clubs on and just start beating on everybody. It was tough. Roosevelt called it the forgotten place of World War II. As a matter of fact, Roosevelt came up there in that country.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I never saw him. I wasn't there when he was there, but
yeah.
he made a journey up into the Aleutian area, into the Alaska area.
And you never got, your servicemen didn't get to see him, or?
I don't think I was there when he was there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if he came after I was there or before. I just remember the news that Roosevelt was touring the North Pacific.
Oh, okay. Well, Luke, that is pretty much the questions I needed.
Okay, you got your machine all set up now?